Hello, okay. Okay, I want to thank first the organizers for inviting me. I'm going to talk about strings, how strings emerge in certain n equals 1 superconformal field theories, and it work based on these two papers I wrote together with Sergio Benvenuti from Pisa in Italy. So let me start by giving a summary of the talk. I'm going to give first a very brief introduction where I'm going to remind you that in recent years it became clear that in the usual n equals 4 ADS50 correspondence, strings in the bulk should be matched with long operators in the boundary. And here I mainly mean classical strings or some excitations, small excitations. And there are three main instances of that correspondence. One is between point point like strings moving along masses geodesics and BPS operators or chiral primaries. Other one is between string excitation and the insertions of certain fields in the long trace of the operator. And the final one is between long string and certain spin chain description of these operators in the field theory. Then I'm going to try to apply this to n equals 1 examples of ADS-CFT, and as it was explained yesterday by Mario Martelli, those examples can be constructed using backgrounds of this type, ADS-5 cross S5, where X5 is a Sasaki-Einstein manifold, and we know examples like T11, which has SU2 cross SU2 cross U1 isometry, a whole series YPQ depending on two integers, which has isometry SU2 cross U1 cross U1, and a new series called LTQR, which has isometry U1 cross U1 cross U1. So I'm going to remind you some facts about those backgrounds, and then I'm going to concentrate on YPQ, and there I'm going to be able to match massless geodesics moving in this point-like string moving along massless geodesics in this background with long operators in the field theory, and compare the R and flavor charges. Then I'm going to study extended string in a more qualitative way, and what I mean by that hopefully will become clear later. But I'm going to be able to compute the effective action for strings moving very fast in this background, and the field theory is strongly coupled, so we cannot compute that the equivalent anomalous dimension in the theory, but I'm going to argue that the anomalous dimension will depend on very generic properties of the operators and do some simplified model that reproduces many of the properties of this action. And then I'm going to have time, I'm going to talk a little bit about the comparison of massless geodesics and long operators in the background LPQR. Okay, so the n equals 4 Young-Mills theory is dual to start to be an ADS-5 cross S5, and thanks to the work of Benjamin Marcel and Anastasia and also Gatsakiran and Polyakov, it became clear that long operators should be thought as strings, and a way to check that is to compare the anomalous dimension of the operators with the corresponding energy of the string. Ferlov and Seidlin extended this to long strings in the bulk, and Minahan and Sarembo extended that to more generic long operators, which has the representation as spin chains, and they argue that computing the number of dimensions is equivalent to using the better answer to solve the Hamiltonian of certain spin chains. And Weiser, Perloff, Acker, and Seidlin were able to reproduce some of these results for long strings used from the point of view of the field theory. And we're going to hear a lot more about this in Weiser's talk on Thursday. And let me just give a very simple example of this idea. Suppose you have an operator like this, trace of many x's and many y's, where x is phi 1 plus phi 2 and y is phi 3 plus phi 4, which are 4 of the 6 scalars in n equals 4 super Young-Mills, so they are n by n matrices. So what Minahan and Sarembo argue is that this can be thought as a spin 1/2 chain, where spin up is x and spin down is y, and it turns out that the Hamiltonian that computes the anomalous dimension of this operator is the Heisenberg Hamiltonian that can be diagonalized, as I said, with a better answer. But for the rest of the talk, I'm going to be interested in another observation, which is that when these spin chains are very long, they become classical, and the anomalous dimension can be computed by solving the equation of motion of a classical action, which in this simple case has this form. N is a unit vector parameterized by theta and phi, and theta and phi are functions of sigma, which parameterize the position of this the field in this spin chain, and time. And it turns out that this action is the same action that you get for the motions of a string in the bulk. But there is a more qualitative idea here that is what I'm going to use for the case of YPQ. And this also provides a very precise map between the operators and the strings. And I'm going to think here also in terms of N equals 4 is a conformance theory, so we have a mapping between operators and space. If you compactify the theory on S3, you can have space which are mapped to operators in R4. So let me think about operators or space. So let's consider an operator of this type. And in the case of S3, it is still a field theory, which S3 can be thought as the boundary of ADS5 in global coordinates. But here I'm still thinking in just purely field theoretic terms. So the space that this operator is dual, it corresponds to in S3, is the localized, that corresponds to a string sitting in the center of ADS5, and it's composed of a very large number of particles X and particles Y. Now, a particular particle, because of the rules of quantum mechanics, can be in any linear combination of those two states, so it can be partially X or partially Y, and the most generic linear combination is given in terms of two angles. Theta, that gives the relative probability of a particle of being type X or being type Y, and phi is a relative phase, which is a quantum mechanical effect. Now, suppose we have an operator like this that corresponds to a state of a large number of these particles, labeled from 1 to n. These are, as fields, they are n by n matrices, so they do not commute, so they have a cyclical order. And we want to understand, this state is conventionally called a coherent state, and we want to understand what is the string description of this particular state, where each of these bits corresponds to a particle in a linear state linear combination given by two angles. Each angle is different for each particle. So this problem has a very simple geometrical description, which is as follows. We can parameterize a two-dimensional sphere with these angles theta and phi, such a way that if you put a point here in the north pole, that represents a particle of type X. If you put it in the south pole, it represents a particle of type Y. And if you put a point in some other place in the sphere, it represents a particle in some linear combination. Now you put a large number of particles, so a large number of points, and these points are cyclically ordered for what I said before of the trace. And moreover, there is a ferromagnetic interaction here that tends, which I didn't explain, but tends to put consecutive points close together. So in the limit of an infinite number of points, these points tend to lie on a curve, and that curve is precisely the shape of a string that describes this state in the bulk. So we see here that strings are a very good way to describe states of large number of particles, at least in that case, and probably generically in the large n limit. Now we want to apply these ideas to n equals 1 examples of ADS-16. And as I say, those are backgrounds of the type ADS-5 cross S-5, exactly the Sasaki-Einstein manifold, which essentially means that if you construct a cone like this, this is a Calabi-Yau manifold. And as suggested by proposed by Klebanov and Witten, you can put these three rings at the tip of the cone and take the near horizon limit, as Maldacena did in the original paper. And the near horizon metric factorizes in an ADS factor and an X5. Instead of ADS5 cross S5, you get ADS5 cross, S5, you get ADS5 cross X5. And they propose to consider X5 to be T11, which was the only Sasaki-Einstein manifold with five dimensions known at the time. But now we can consider also YPQ that was found by these authors and the corresponding field theory by these other authors, or LPQR, which was found by these authors, and in these three papers the corresponding field theory was found. And to complete to finish the introduction, let me show you briefly the metric of this manifold. T11 is two spheres parameterized by four angles, theta 1, phi 1 for the first sphere and theta 2, phi 2 for the second one. And over them there is a U1 fibration parameterized by this angle psi. YPQ is very similar. There is a four-dimensional manifold parametrized by theta, phi, y, and psi, and over it there is a U1 fibration parameterized by this angle alpha. And there are some non-trivial functions here. I'm just showing p of y, which is a rational function. This polynomial has three roots, and the two lowest roots are conventionally called y1 and y2, and determine the range of variation of the coordinate y. And they have some expression in terms of p and q, which are the two integers that determine or define the manifold. And I'm just showing p of y because if you do a coordinate transformation from alpha to beta in this way, it turns out that these two other functions combine, and the only non-trivial function you have is precisely p of y. Okay, so this is the introduction, and LPQR I'm going to leave for later if I have time. So now we want to study the motion of point light strings in this background. And then I write the Polyakov action ignoring the sigma derivatives and the constraints, so the strings are point light. And one can compute also the conjugate momenta to the coordinates. And one ends up with this, the important expression that for this problem, which is this one, that relates the energy of the string, which I'm calling delta because it's going to be interpreted as a conformal dimension in the dual of the dual operator. And here we have the conserved quantity, so let me remind you that this property was SU2, and this J squared is the total SU2 of this geodesic, of this particle, and phi psi is one of its components. Then there were two U1s, one is this phi alpha that we call U1 flavor, and this is the U1, which is the R charge. P sub y is a momentum conjugate to y, it's not conserved, but the energy is conserved, so this can be thought as a Hamiltonian for the motion in y, which has a kinetic term and a potential term. But in the first thing you can solve the equation of motion of y if you want. But the first thing I want to notice is that j squared is bigger than one of its components, and these two are positive, so delta is always bigger than 3/2 qr, which is good because of the bound imposed by a superconformal algebra with n equals 1. And in the rest of the talk, I'm going to be interested mainly in what I call VPS geodesics, which are the ones that satisfy or saturate this bound. So if delta has to be equal to that, P sub y has to be 0. That means that the string is at rest in y, so it doesn't move. This has to be equal to that, j equals to P psi. And y, moreover, the place where the geodesic is resting has to be such that this is 0. So we get some conditions for VPS geodesics, which is that this condition here, and essentially y has to be is the ratio of the U1 charge and the R charge. And this can range from Y1 to Y2. So this as the maximum and minimum U1 charge that you can have for given R charge. And one thing I didn't say is that one is negative and the other is positive. So the minimum is negative, corresponding to this because of the minus sign. And for this is a positive, maximum U1 charge. And also one can compute the total SU2 charge in terms of the R charge, and there is a factor here, 1 minus Y, with the same Y that you have there. Now we want to find the corresponding operators in the dual gate theories. And yesterday there was was explained a little bit what the theories are. And I'm going to concentrate one example, which is Y32, which has some queer representation, which I'm not going to use. I'm going to use this alternative representation, so let me explain what this is. This diagram here represents an n equals 1 superconformal theory. It has gauge loop SU1 to the 6. And each of the nodes here represents an SUN gauge loop, and 1, 2 are the labels. So there are some which are repeated, so these two should be identified. These two, so these actually you see can be drawn on a torus. The arrows are chiral matter, and they transform in the fundamental representation of the gauge loop where the arrow origins and the anti-fundamental where the arrow ends. And the extension in the horizontal direction represents the U1 charge, and in the vertical direction, the SU2 charge. So this has minus 1 U1 charge, and that's plus 1. And the vertical direction means that it has a spin 1/2. And let me ignore for a moment the red arrows. Okay, now we want to study gauge invariant operators, which are products of these chiral fields, and this means collections of these arrows. And for them to be gauge invariant, one sees that they have to be closed paths in this diagram. For example, 5, 6, 4, 2, 3, 3, 4, 5, that will be a gauge invariant operator. But since that becomes a little bit complicated because of this identification, so it's better to put this many times and tile a plane with this unit cell if you want. And you get a picture like the one that I have here. So the gauge invariant operators now are constructed starting from one node, for example, this node number 5, and then I move in this lattice until I reach some other node, or the same with, but it has to have number 5. So that is identified with the original one, and that will be a gauge invariant operator. Suppose now we want to have an operator with maximum U1 charge. So we start from here, and the U1 charge is horizontal direction. So I have to move in the right direction. But this arrow points left, so I have to go up, then I can go left, then I can go up because this is the wrong way. Then I have to go up, up, and arrive at 5 here. So I cannot move faster than this to the right direction. So this is the operator with maximum U1 charge for given, for example, SU2 charge. And to the left, you, every three steps you move to the left, you have to move one to the one up. So you have a maximum and minimum slope that you can move here. And one can compute the R charges and the global charges of these operators and precisely agree with those of the geodesic sitting at Y1 and Y2. And some observations are related that were done in that paper. So now let me start the discussion of extended strings. So we want to study the strings which are extended in such a way that each point of the string moves very fast along one of these GPS geodesics. And to that, we can write the metric in this abbreviated way, where this is a four-dimensional manifold, and this is the U1 vibration, and we introduce a new coordinate, psi1 equals to psi minus 3t, which gives the new metric like that, and the property of this is that if a point is at rest in this metric, that means psi1 is constant in time, then the original psi will go like 3t, and that means that here d squared will be 0. So if you have a particle at rest here, it will be moving at the speed of light in the original frame, and moreover, one can see that we'll be doing so along one of these GPS geodesics that we had found before. Now, if we have an extended string, we are going to consider an extended string in this frame, which is almost at rest. If it does so, then in the original frame, we will move in very fast along this GPS geodesic. And if we identify the time on the worksheet with the time in the background, then we should take the limit where the string is moving very slowly, the velocity is very small, and with that limit, you get a reduced action that is just this very simple form. There are these four coordinates of the manifold, and psi 1, the vibration becomes a trivial coordinate here because it's the total derivative. Or for the case of YPQ, you get this action, which has an S, Y and beta, look like canonical conjugate, so this should be thought as PQ dot minus a Hamiltonian, and it has an SU2 part, where N is a unit vector parameterized by theta and phi, and it looks very similar to the action that I showed at the beginning, except for this 1 minus y. But if you remember, the shape of this heuristic, the total angular momentum, was 1 minus y times the R charge. So this 1 minus y is just the density of SU2 angular momentum, and that's why it appears there. Okay, now we want to understand this string from the point of view of the field theory. So we have to consider this lattice again. We have this path, which was L plus and L minus. And instead of those, now we consider a more generic path like this red path here that will be a Gaussian-Bayesian operator, and we want to see if it has a stringy description. And we were going to do that for the limit where this lattice becomes very small or the path is very long, so in the continuum limit. So in the continuum limit, you can parameterize this path by the continuous coordinate sigma, and the slope of the path will change along sigma. Instead of being constant like this or like that, it will change, and since the slope of this path was associated with Y1 and this with Y2, then we are going to say that this path will be associated with a string that is extended in the direction Y. And Y as a function of sigma for the string will be the same as the slope as a function of sigma for that path. And moreover, each piece of this path has an SU2 spin, and you need to say in which direction it's pointing, and then we will have two angles, theta and phi, as a function of sigma. And it turns out that one also has to introduce a conjugate, canonical conjugate coordinate to Y, and that will be beta, the one that you have in the bulk. So you have four coordinates as a function of sigma, and there is a very precise mapping between this path and the string. The way to check that will be to compute the anomalous dimension of these operators and see if it agrees with the energy of the string. However, the field theory is a strongly coupled point, so we cannot compute the anomalous dimension of this path or of this operator. So, in principle, we couldn't do any more, but we had the suspicion that the string that describes the action of the string that describes this path actually shouldn't depend on the details of this lattice or the details of the Hamiltonian, and in the continuous limit should depend only on the rough properties of. Converting to some other path, I mean, some operators will be converting to some other. By the Hamiltonian or by the dilatation operator. So we try to test that idea by using an effective model, which is much simpler. In this effective model, we consider a square lattice or rectangular lattice with one side parallel to L plus and the other side parallel to L minus, and the paths are just left and right jumps, like this. And the Hamiltonian will interchange the left-right jump with the right-left jump. That will be the simplest Hamiltonian that converts one path or one operator into some other. So the Hamiltonian that we propose is a simple permutation operator between consecutive links, so you have left-right, you interchange with right-left, and you subtract this one, so that if you have all right or all left, that will be zero because that is a BPS protected operator and shouldn't have any anomalous dimension. So now, how much? I have five already. Then I want to compute the classical action for this Hamiltonian and for this path. And one way to do that is to use the method of Cosine State, where you assume that each link of the path is a linear superposition of a link pointing left and a link pointing right. And the linear combination is given by this row 1, row 2, which are normalized. And this pointing left has some slope, which is given by y1, and the other has a slope given by y2. So the average slope I will going to define as the coordinate y. Each of these paths also has an SU2 spin, so I'm going to assume that it points in the direction z and maximum projection along the third direction, and then I'm going to rotate it with a generic SU2 matrix parameterized by 3 Euler angles. And then I'm going to add a phase alpha conjugate to the U1 label charge. And then I'm going to write the cosine state action, which is simply this action that if you evaluate with generic variations with respect to O gives you the Schrodinger equation, but if you use this O, which is an answer for the state, we give some equation and some variational approach for this, the motion of this coordinate. And if you do that, you get the action for this path, which in the continuum limit is exactly the same action that I had before from the bulk, except for two differences. One is that we don't know the effective coupling of this Hamiltonian, and before this used to be lambda r squared over alpha prime, the radius of ADS in units, and also this function p of y is just a quadratic polynomial instead of being that rational function. Now, these functions are actually very similar, and these have zeros also in y1 and y2, and this wasn't put by hand. This just came from the fact that the path has a maximum and minimum slope given by y1 and y2. So we get an action which is very similar, and perhaps we did something wrong here, or naive, which is that we didn't, when we took the continuum limit, we did it just naively, but one knows that if you take the continuum limit, one should do a randomization group and find an infrared fixed point for this action. It could be that in the infrared, this function p of y actually flows to that function p of y, and one idea why that could be so is that this is a four-dimensional metric, and the only difference between these two p of y is that if you put this p of y, the four-dimensional metric satisfies the Einstein equation. So if the Einstein equation is proportional to the beta function that we didn't compute, unfortunately, yet, then it would mean that the proper continuum limit will actually flow to this, and then what the string action in the bulk is describing is a very generic property of these operators in this lattice, which doesn't depend on the details of the dilatation operator or of the particular way in which that lattice is drawn. If that way, if that's true, then it means that in this case, at least the Larsen limit is much simpler of what one might have thought, because it depends only on very generic properties of the operators and of the theory. Okay, so for LTQR, I'm going to say be very brief. It has a very similar metric with a four-dimensional manifold and a U1 vibration over it. The fit theory description is similar, so here I have, and now I'm going to explain what these five arrows are. Instead of SU2, you take a U1 subgroup of SU2, which can be the rotations around the z-axis, for example. Then each of these, which were spin 1/2, split into +1/2 and -1/2. So if you consider this to be the U1 charge, then this is the proper representation where you have +1/2, -1/2, and +/- U1 favor charge. And this diagram can be seen as made of this box and these other boxes which pointing right and this pointing downwards. And one can say, okay, suppose instead of this I take 3 pointing left and 1 point, so 3 pointing up and 1 pointing down. And it turns out that you can construct the field theory with this diagram, which is precisely the same as dual to L154. And this was dual to L153, which is the same as Y32. So that's identified, and we found out that there is a generic recipe that if you glue these blocks in these quantities, these many blocks, and these many blocks, then the dual, the R charges of all these fields, and the central charge agrees precisely what you can compute from this manifold. And for the purpose of this talk, I'm interested in the chiral primary operator, so one can do again a lattice like before, and you get four important operators that you can match to four geodesics. Now there are two non-trivial charges, sorry, non-trivial directions, one x that goes from x1 to x2, and y that goes from minus 1 to 1. So these 4 points, geodesics sitting at these 4 points, match precisely with four operators, or four paths that you can construct in this area. Okay, so let me just say my conclusion. For the case of YPQ, we have much massive geodesics with chiral primaries. I didn't say, but some small perturbations of the geodesic which become non-BPS can be matched with current insertion, as was done by Gomez and Oguri in the case of T11. The extended string were matched to long operators, but we couldn't compare the normal dimension, and I argue some that the in the continuum limit that shouldn't be relevant. We use some effective model. And for FPQR, I didn't describe very much, but we found the dual gauge theories and match the BPS geodesic with long chiral primary. Okay, that's all.
Questions? Oh, you have 2 more minutes, Martin. So I think we'll just thank Martin again.